And welcome back to Speak Up Las Cruces. In our last half hour, we're going to be talking with Scott Hayes Strom. He is the, where is your title here?
Cultural Resource Program Manager.
Thank you. At White Sands National Park. And more importantly, or at least for our discussion, he will also be the featured speaker this year for next month. I'll get this right eventually.
Okay.
For the Academy for Learning and Retirement. And these are the four presentations that he will have. The first one will be on Tuesday, November 4th. And that will be From Seabed to Sand Dunes, the Geologic Story of White Sands. Next one will be on Thursday, November 6th. That will be Giants in the Sands, Megafauna, and the First People of the Tularosa Basin. Megafauna, did I pronounce that
right? That's correct, yes.
The next one after that will be Tuesday, November 11th, Life on the Dunes, the Wildlife of White Sands National Park. And the final one will be on Thursday, November 13th, and that will be From Salt Trails to National Treasure, the Modern Human Story of White Sands. And as always, those are going to be at the Doniana Community College East Mesa campus. And for more information on that, you can go to the Doniana County Community College website, type in ALR, and that will take you to where you need to go. So with all of that, thank you so much for joining us.
Well, thank you for having me. I do want to say this is going to be sponsored by the ALR, and this is because of the shutdown. This is not sponsored, or any federal funds are not being spent on this. I'm speaking as a professional archaeologist.
That's a very good point.
We are very delighted that you're here.
But I'm very glad to be doing this. It's such an interesting and exciting place to work.
Yes.
I was going to ask you
personally,
how did you first come to White Sands, and what was your first impression the first time you saw it?
The first time I saw it was when my father was a PhD student at NMSU.
Okay.
And so that was my first exposure to it back in the 70s. And then life took me all over the place to Nebraska, where I received an undergraduate degree that was a mix of one of those special degrees in anthropology, history, and Native American studies. So I looked to where I wanted to go for a graduate degree, and I was interested in historic archaeology, but all of those colleges are still up where it snows and it's cold, and NMSU is starting to expand its historic archaeology focus a lot more, and so I came here and got into a program with the federal government that hires students before they graduate, and you fill out all of these qualifications, and they hire you full-time. And I happened to be working at the Lincoln National Forest at that time. And they had an opening when I graduated, and so I stayed there. They say if you don't have an opening there, they'll move you to some forest somewhere in the U.S.
Right.
I happened to be lucky.
Right.
And spent almost 8 years doing field archaeology work, walking the grounds and looking and learning about the history and the both prehistoric and historic. And after that, I decided my knees were starting to get old. So this is actually my third career. And so I saw an opening for the Cultural Resource Program Manager of White Sands National Park. That was a new position. I'm the first one that they hired, because when they transitioned from monument to park,
right,
it was a required position. So I got fortunate to work at White Sands. And I spent just a little over a year, and the more I learn, the more I know I have to learn. It's just that fascinating, and every day when you go out into the sand, something new is there.
Yeah.
I'll bet that's right.
Mm-hmm. I have, through the decades, really enjoyed White Sands, and including camping out overnight under the full moon, mm-hmm, or all the, you know, you look out in the desert and you think, well, there's nothing here, and then you start looking and there's everything there.
Exactly, and so that's what these four talks are about, are just maybe 10% of what you can see.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So tell us about how did they come to be? Why is it that we have this one thing that is so different than everything else, mm-hmm, all around it?
What happened way back about 75 million years ago.
Before your time.
Yeah. A little bit before me. Yeah. When Pangaea was formed, all of these inland seas, this was one of the inland seas, and a whole bunch of gypsum was deposited in this ocean. And over time, it all disappeared, and the continents shrank and all of that, and the Tularosa Basin was formed. And it's a closed basin. There's no way for the water to escape. Whatever comes in has to evaporate. And so it all started taking all of the gypsum in those mountains and depositing it. And there's enough water, and water is the secret. That's a magnet that holds the gypsum into this place. Mm. If it wasn't there, it would have disappeared. It would have blown away in the winds and be up in Kansas or somewhere.
Okay, and because it all gets funneled down, that's why it's so concentrated in that one area.
Yeah.
Have you been able to find any fossils? Is there prehistoric records of any of the sea life that was
Sea life, we don't find much at all.
Because it's up in the down at the bottom.
It's down up in the mountains still.
Okay.
And what we have found are footsteps, what we call fossilized. They're preserved in what used to be a lake on the west side of the park that's co-used with White Sands Missile Range, so the public has very limited access to this. And these are from the megafauna. Those are mammoths, mastodons, sloths, not those little cute ones down in Central America that you pet, but these sloths were about 8 to 10 foot tall.
Wow.
And their feet print are foot and a half
long. Oh, my
long.
Gosh. Yeah.
And then as well, human beings. Very, very early. They date back to 20 to 23,000 years old.
Wow. That makes us rethink a lot about what we had assumed about this area and human existence.
When did people come to this continent?
Yeah.
Native Americans said, we have always been here. This is part of our history. And these fossils help prove that, I think.
Yeah.
We haven't found, we took until this summer to find fossils of these animals because the soil is just so acidic that it eats just about everything. And we have finally found part of a jaw of, we think it might be a bison. We don't know for sure because it's not very much of it. It's about 2 inches long. And the other is part of the leg or tibia of another large animal. Again, it's still buried. We don't want to take it away because it's preserved that way.
So the story of White Sands is evolving.
It is always evolving, yes.
And how does the gypsum sands that we have here, is it similar to, I'm thinking Egypt or the other places where you think of sand dunes, or is it unique? Is there anything in the world that's quite like it?
There are a few smaller gypsum sand dunes.
Right.
That's the big difference.
Right.
There's one down by the Guadalupe Mountains. It's not very large. It's mostly salt, but it does have gypsum mixed into it. And there are some other smaller ones, but this is the largest one.
And this one, it's cool. What I noticed is a difference is gypsum is a lot cooler on bare feet than, say, sand.
And the silica sand, yes.
Yeah.
And this is also because of the water table. I told you water is the key to everything. Water is about 2 feet underneath the surface of the dunes, and that's what keeps it cool as well. And it doesn't stick to you either.
No, it doesn't.
No. Where you go out into the silica dunes, like up in Colorado, roll around in the sand and you come out covered.
Right, yeah. I hadn't thought about that. Mm-hmm. So over time, will it be impacted by climate change? And if there's less water in the area, what eventually will that mean?
It'll probably blow away in about 300,000 years, maybe.
Okay.
It's moving very slowly.
Yeah.
And as long as the water from the mountains keep coming down and keeping it stabilized, it's not going to move.
Okay.
And it does move anyway, right? The white sands are just sort of inching along.
They are inching to the northeast.
Okay, to the northeast. Okay. So they won't cover up the highway.
No. The ones on the south end, we have to get out and shovel it back out of the highway every 10 years or so, because that one dune just keeps moving south for some reason.
It's probably a teenager.
So since you started your job, has there been anything out there that surprised you, that you didn't realize going into it? And
quite a lot of the science, but one that really surprised me was the historic talk that I'm talking about, of the people that worked at White Sands since it began.
Okay.
We used New Mexico State University students to do a lot of ground surveys to look at things.
Yes.
And they were, a few years ago, were looking at trash deposits along a historic road. And we found one of them happened to belong to people that worked at White Sands during the late 20s and 30s before Prohibition had ended. And you'd think that they were isolated. We found out they had dinners with people at what would become Holloman Air Force Base. They had some of the more expensive Victrolas. We found labels and all kinds of the expensive colognes and perfumes for the women. And then we also found a whiskey bottle from Juarez. So they were driving down New Mexico and bringing back liquor. It's like they knew how to get around things, didn't
okay.
they?
Okay, yeah.
But they had a really good life for being isolated at that time.
Right, yeah. Right. And you mentioned the change from a national monument to a national park. What, in terms of the visitor experience, what difference does that make, do you think?
It's increased it tremendously.
Yeah.
For some reason, a lot of people that when they it was a monument, they visited. But once it became a park, they said, now that it's a national park, I have to visit.
Right.
Right? Yes.
Nobody quite understands why that happens. It was just a change of signs.
Some people have a bucket list where they want to hit all
every
national park.
Yeah, yeah, that must be it. But it's just the same as it was with a new sign.
I guess that's right. It just lends a little bit more prestige to it.
Mm-hmm. You know, it got me a job.
There you go. talk a little bit more about the Magna Fauna, because that's all new to me. I didn't realize. But dinosaurs or?
No dinosaurs. These were all formed in the last 20, 30,000 years,
okay.
That time period.
Okay.
And they lasted until about 9,000 years ago when that, we're not really sure whether it was hunting or I think it was just climate change dried out.
Right.
This used to be a grassland and a nice little lake that was just about as large as the park is now.
It's hard to imagine.
And it's huge. And that slowly dried up and all of the plants and climate changed and people can adapt to that kind of thing faster than the fauna could. And so in this area, it was probably that chased them away and they died out because they couldn't adapt. About 9,000 years ago. But people have been here constantly.
Yeah, I guess that's a little surprising to me.
Going back 20,000 years now, these footprints suggest.
Yeah, yes.
How does one date a footprint?
A lot of science. When these footprints were laid down, all of those grasses and the grasslands would blow in.
Oh, so
to
you
the
could
feet
actually,
prints.
Yeah, you have a biological record too on top
yes,
of.
Yes, yes. You cannot do any carbon dating on sand.
Right.
It has to be organic matter. And so all of the little seeds and things that were left inside the feet print as it blew in before they were buried, those are still preserved. And we were doing some plaster casts for the Las Cruces Museum for their exhibit about people that live here. And we thought we had cleaned them all, but as we pulled the cast off, there were still seeds stuck in the original cast.
Ah,
and it
had
stuck into the plaster.
Cool.
So
we are talking with Scott Hayes-Strom. He is going to be the presenter in November for the Academy for Learning and Retirement on the White Sands National Park. I meant to mention earlier, if you'd like to join us, give us a call, 575-526-5825. Your third presentation is on the wildlife in the park now. And the first thing I always think of is the oryx. So can you talk a little bit about how that got there and then what else is in the park?
The oryx came to the United States from the I believe it was Bureau of Land Management. They wanted to have some big game hunting attraction. And there naturally is not any big game out there. So they went to Africa and thought, ooh, those oryx are cool. Let's bring in about 20. And they didn't realize that this is the top of the food chain.
Yes.
And so there's no
predator.
Coyotes can't bring one of those things down.
Yeah.
Right. Oryx are so mean, they can take cars and shred them to pieces.
Are they pigs? What are they?
No, they're actually gazelles.
Gazelles.
They're in that family.
Okay.
Huh. With a horn.
With those horns that are 4 and 5 feet long and extremely sharp. And so they've just become the top of the food chain and keep reproducing. We keep raising our fences higher and higher, and we're installing one-way fencing so they can get out but can't come back in.
Okay. That kind of answered my question. They're getting to be a little bit more of a problem than an asset.
They have actually seen them up in Amarillo area.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Well, and I know that they're showing up on this side of the Oregon, and that surprised me hiking up in there one day and think, well, you belong over in
here. Yes, the one horned one that's up there.
Yeah,
yes. Become famous. Yeah.
And is cantankerous.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But they're, because they eat everything, they're impacting the natural
grass and habitats
and all of the animals that should be there.
So what seemed like a good idea at the time?
All too often, our human interventions have unintended consequences.
Yeah. Yeah.
So what is the most endemic isn't quite the right word, but the animal life that is most
like native
associated and are known to with White Sands?
I think there are two.
Uh-huh.
The first one are our lizards, the earless lizard. If you find them over here in this valley, they're kind of that grayish-brown color.
Uh-huh.
Over there, they are white.
Great camouflage.
Yeah, most all of the species that live in White Sands have adapted to be white.
Yeah.
But you take them out of the park, they will turn back to their native color.
Really? Yeah. How long does that process take?
It takes one or two generations.
Okay. Yeah.
So it takes a while to get out.
That's
the other one is moths.
Moths?
There has been a study of moths by Eric Metzler, who passed away a few years ago, but he spent 30 years studying endemic moths. And there are about 25 species that are found at White Sands and nowhere else.
Wow. And I wouldn't think there would be much for a moth to eat.
That's what I was thinking. What do they survive?
There's no wool sweaters.
We have yucca.
Okay. Yeah, that's true.
We have all of these blooming flowers, the cactus that bloom, and they just hop around and they pollinate a lot of the plants.
Don't normally think of moths as wildlife. But
I cover everything in the talk. both animal, reptile, and anything else that's alive.
And can you talk a little bit about the impact that tourists have? Obviously, this is a national park, and so we want to make it available to as many people as we can. But the balancing act that you play out there trying to ensure that they get to see and taste and get the feel of the park, but in a way that doesn't cause damage.
Right.
Fortunately, the most sensitive parts of the park, which some of it is the what we call biocrust, which is a little cryptozoic kind of thing that's almost a living dirt, are out in the missile range part, the co-use area, and so the public doesn't get there much.
Mm-hmm.
But you get up on the dunes, and we have very little impact. I remember the last time we use UTVs to travel across because it's take us a week to go 10 miles. And we went out and you could follow the path, the tracks and things, but we came back 2 weeks later and you couldn't find the tracks again.
Right.
So the sand covers over a multitude of sins.
Yeah.
We also find a lot of interesting trash, especially after our concerts. But that part that the public is in is very forgiving to human interaction.
Good, good. I know when I was first visiting the monument and camping, there were no designated camping areas. It was only like once a month, full moon.
Mm-hmm.
You just hike out into the desert with your little backpack. And it was, and close encounters with various types of snakes. But now you've got some very nice camping areas that are established. Are they open all the time or is it
they closed during COVID.
Okay,
of course,
because that would make
nobody
sense.
Could be in the park, including staff.
Right.
And once we reopened, we haven't had the staff.
Of course.
Because you have to have somebody there 24 hours a day.
Yeah.
And until recently, there were only two or three law enforcement officers for the park. So that made it hard to do that.
Okay, so it hasn't really gotten back to what it was prior to COVID.
And then the sands have covered over it.
Oh, yes.
And there are no plans in the immediate future to reopen camping.
Okay. That's too bad because it is really a wonderful experience. But I do understand that it's better for the park just to be wild.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And am I right that the park is shut down until the government reopens?
Only a partial shutdown.
Oh, okay.
I don't remember. I think the funding has come from our foundation, the National Park Foundation.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And they are also contractors that run the concessions and the bookstore. And so they're open.
They're still open.
You can get out into the sand.
Okay.
You can go so far because we don't want you to get out and get lost.
Of course.
Which happens.
With a shortage of staff, they're just maintenance people and one law enforcement officer. And so if you get out there in the heat, you'll probably not come back.
Yeah, not yes. a good idea.
So for safety, we have that closed. Right. Our boardwalk, which is handicap accessible, that's also closed, but that's been closed for a year and a half.
So that's not related to the shutdown?
No, it was related to the F-16 crash.
Oh, okay.
But yeah. the park is still open. Visitors are still welcome.
Okay, good. Good to know.
Mm-hmm.
What in your presentation do you think is going to surprise people? People lived here a long time, have gone to the park several times, but what are some of the things that maybe we don't know about it?
I think because I'm on the inside, I focused all of my presentations on stories that sit more into the co-use area so people won't be familiar with them. Everything, if you search hard enough, you'll be able to find all of this on the internet.
Right.
But I know where to look. And so they'll be surprised by some of the stories of the fauna and how much is out there that we have such a long history that we can look at. Because on the south side where our water tower is, this year we've discovered more feet print that are not in gypsum sand. So we're adding more and more to the story all the time. So I'll be telling new stories that most visitors have never heard of that expand on the video that we have at the visitor center and all of that. And then using administrative history, I can tell stories of when it was being built as a national monument and the people that worked and lived there and some of the fun stories.
Like the whiskey bottle from Juarez?
Like the whiskey bottle and the man that wanted to make a hot spring resort.
Ah.
Well, how did that go?
That failed after about a year.
Okay.
He was quite an interesting character, so we'll talk about some of the interesting characters.
I think that's true. I think White Sands would attract people who are a little quirky, in terms of development ideas.
Yeah, and not just strange people, but NASA comes out. They are working on how to work on Mars because the environment and the sand and the way the sand works
that's interesting.
Is exactly the same. Yeah.
So in Mars, it's gypsum? Or
I think they say it's gypsum. I believe it is.
Oh, that's fascinating.
The fields and the dunes and the way things, the dune movements.
Yeah, and the dune movements.
All work the same way up there.
Yeah.
And so they're researching in our park.
I think that's fascinating. Yeah. Is there anything we haven't asked you about that you would like to make sure our listeners know about this, your talk, or about White Sands?
White Sands is just a wonderful place to come and learn. We do, we're done for the season, but we have our full moon night concerts.
Yes. Oh, good.
They'll be starting up again when it gets a little bit warmer. Because in the night, the temperature drops really fast, and so we don't do those. But we will be starting, when funding comes back, what we call the Lake Lucero guided talks.
Mm-hmm.
And those are taking you out into Lake Lucero where all those feet print are so you can actually see them and photograph them. You do have to go to our website to watch when they're coming back, and you do have to make reservations.
Okay, so what is your website?
It is, I believe, www.nps.whsa.gov.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Once again, talking with Scott Hayes Strom. He will be the presenter for the Academy for Learning in Retirement for the coming month. And you can find out about all of those by going on the Donnyana Community College website and or just show up for the presentations. They will be on Tuesday, November 4th, Thursday, November 6th, the next week, Tuesday, November 11th, and Thursday, November 13th. And all of those are at the Donnyana Community College campus, 2800 North Sonoma Ranch Boulevard. Well, we already asked you what we haven't asked you, but I guess when people who live here for a long time kind of take that for advantage, and we take our friends when they come to visit there.
Yeah.
But it does. I mean, as somebody who's out there all the time, I assume that you have an appreciation for that that goes a little bit deeper.
Mm-hmm. I do. I find that when we are able to get out in the sands with the public and watch them interact with it and we talk to them, the joy that people have when they rent sleds and slide down the hills, they become children again, the adults.
Yes. Yes.
And the children are just fascinated about how the sand works and all of the – they will find lizards and chase lizards. And just the public, the more they interact with this, the more they treasure what they have here.
How fortunate we are.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And it's just a really interesting place for people to visit over and over again. Because like mm-hmm. I said, when we go to work, we see new sand every day. And so the visitors, you can see a new park every year if you come out.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's right. And I remember the effort that went into getting it named a national park. And that took several years to get that through. And it now that it has, it really has become a terrific asset for the state and really a treasure for this region and something that that we could be very, like I said, every time we have guests, that's the first place we take them to because
yeah.
there's just nothing else like it anywhere in the country or probably in the world.
Yeah, they could go up to Mars. But
there we go.
Yeah, there we go.
Other than that, this is the next best.
Yes, it is.
anything that you have coming up? I probably not, given the state of where we're at and also the season. I mean, this is probably a little bit of your off season, but.
And as the season, though, brings out the wildlife, so things that you may not see, you'll have a chance to see now that it's cool enough.
Yeah.
You know, because right on the surface, there are days that it gets out to 120 degrees.
Yeah.
Very early in the morning. So now that it's cool, you know, all of the lizards, all of the other bugs and things that run around are out and more active.
Yeah.
So if you like to see those kinds of things, you'll be able to have a chance to see those more often.
Yeah, that's interesting. I hadn't thought about that, but... Yeah, like I said, it's just a treasure, and I want to thank you so much for sharing a little bit about your knowledge
with
and experience.
And reminding Walt and me what a wonderful place is just down the road.
That's absolutely right.